In the California Road Trip Republic, we believe you take adventure for a ride. Whether coastal cruising, mountain motoring, or redwood roaming, discover beauty around every turn. Your road trip can kick off from anywhere.
Starting route.
But it should always start at visitcalifornia.com. Then buckle up, crank those tunes, and discover why California is the ultimate playground.
In order to support our show, we need the help of some great advertisers. And we want to make sure those advertisers are ones you'll actually want to hear about. But we need to learn a little more about you to make that possible. So go to podsurvey.com/Barry and take a quick anonymous survey that will help us get to know you better. That way, we can bring on advertisers you won't want to skip. Once you've completed the quick survey, you can enter for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Terms and conditions apply. Again, that's podsurvey.com/Barry, B-E-R-R-Y. Thanks for your help.
Saquon Barkley. Yeah, my daughter's also asked me if we're going to win now, Daddy, and the answer is no.
Yeah, that's right. But your daughters are asking, like, well, are we going to win now? Because it's, you know, it's plus 125,
sure.
And this feels like, yeah, exactly.
Yep.
You've trained your daughters to be degenerate gamblers.
Yeah.
Which I like, by the way, you know.
When I can't get a hold of you, I'll text Remy, and I'll be like, hey, what do we like? I need a line on the Orioles.
Actually, so I have this bet on Kobe White in the NBA to win most improved player, so I'm taking my daughter to Barclays Center tomorrow night to watch them play the Bulls. That's what fatherhood is all about. Taking your daughter to Bulls Nets.
Fantasy Football Happy Hour with Matthew Berry, served by Applebee's.
Welcome to the Fantasy Football Happy Hour. I'm Connor Rogers alongside Matthew Berry, Jay Croucher. Fellas, I thought we were going to start this show talking about a little March Madness. We are going to get to rankings. We are going to get to NFL Draft. But there is no other way than to jump right into Stephon Diggs being traded to the Houston Texans.
Blockbuster deal, you know, kind of a snoozy Wednesday in April, early April, and all of a sudden, boom, Stephon Diggs, who's been tweeting some cryptic stuff and posting some cryptic stuff for years. Yeah, exactly. But finally comes to fruition. So as we check out our rotoworld.com player news, the fact of the matter is Stephon Diggs gets traded to the Texans. There's like a second-round pick. Do you have the exact details of the deals?
The exact deal is Stephon Diggs, along with a 2024 sixth and a 2025 fifth, goes to the Texans. The Texans send back just a 2025 second-round pick. Now, the Bills will carry over $31 million in dead money. All of this tells you they wanted nothing to do with Stephon Diggs.
They were like, we want out of the Stephon Diggs business, as you see here from NFL Network. Ian Rappaport, to be specific, it's a 2025 second-rounder going to Buffalo. That's Minnesota's pick. Bills are giving a fifth-rounder and a sixth this year, along with Stephon Diggs. They wanted out of the Stephon Diggs business in a desperate, desperate way here. And you sort of get it, by the way. Like, let's just talk about lots to break down, obviously, but just from Buffalo's point of view, they clearly felt that in addition to being perhaps an off-the-field distraction or a distraction in the locker room, maybe there's some rift going on there. Once Ken Dorsey was fired, from week 11 on, Stephon Diggs had five or fewer receptions in five of his last seven games. Fewer than 75 receiving yards in all but one of his last games. He had one receiving touchdown in his final seven games. Single-digit fantasy points, by the way, not that that matters to the Bills, but it does matter to us, in five of his last seven games, just sort of another way to show, like, the production wasn't there. A 65% catch rate or fewer in five of his last seven games. Just to put a fine note on it, as anyone who had Stephon Diggs down the stretch last year knows this, on a points-per-game basis, he was wide receiver 44, averaging just 10.3 points. He had just 10.3 points. So wide receiver 44 on points per game basis last year. He was not good down the stretch. Now, some of that, there were a couple of big plays that they missed. You know, the touchdowns are a little bit fluky, only one in seven games. Like, obviously, that bottoms it out there. You see it there on your screen again, averaging just barely 10 points per game. 45 yards a game is what he was averaging. and under five receptions a game. Compare that with, you know, when he had Ken Dorsey there. So clearly the production was down. They felt like at age 31, hey, just get out from this bad contract. Like, it's an addition by subtraction. Now, well, what do you got, Jay?
Well, it's just to say, like, it just, I think it kind of, it gives a lot of context to what happens, how what happened in the second half of the season, the fact they've moved on from him and taken this insane cap hit, where you just watch the games and beyond the stats, like, he just didn't look the same.
No.
They were taking him out on, like, key third downs against the Eagles with their season on the line. He just didn't seem to have the same burst or explosion. To your point about the off-field stuff, like, he is the embodiment of that Denny Carter thing about the wide receiver tweeting, the enemy speaks quietly and holds a knife or whatever.
Right,
like,
right.
Diggs has always been that way. It didn't seem like a happy marriage. So I think this makes a lot of sense. I think the big question now is that, was that just an aberration because maybe some health stuff and off-the-field stuff, or is that the guy that he is going forward? I think the answer is probably somewhere in between.
Yeah, I mean, look, so massive implications fantasy-wise on both the Bills side of the ball and the Texans side of the ball. So we're going to talk about the Texans, then we'll get to the Bills. But, Connor, just from a tape standpoint, from the X's and O's, did you feel like Diggs had lost a step, or was it just like they just weren't on the same page and their offense changed?
I didn't think he looked like the same player while the offense changed. So do you wonder, did they see that and decided to go in a different direction of the offense, or is there something medically that we weren't privy to with Stephon Diggs? Is there something odd with the relationship with him and Josh Allen, because some of the things he tweets, and I know people are very sensitive about, like, why do we care about what he tweets? Well, the team also ended up just trading him, and like we said, they are carrying over $31 million in dead money. So there was something bigger than football here, it appears.
Yeah.
But the football wasn't great. I want to be very clear with that. The football was not great. The chemistry that they've had, they missed on a couple deep balls. And Diggs is a guy that, as great as he is at his best when he is fed a million targets and is featured throughout this offense. And it's no surprise his play took a dive when the Bills became a more balanced offense under Joe Brady, which I didn't think they always were under Ken Dorsey.
For sure. But the positives are, let's talk about this now. Let's move over to the Texan side of the ball. Massive implications. Number one is, like, listen, C.J. Stroud was already going to be one of the top quarterbacks off the board after what we saw last year. Now a second year in the system, a second year in the NFL. But now that you've added Stephon Diggs to a wide receiver room that has Nico Collins, that has Tank Dell, that has Dalton Schultz, you got Noah Brown there as well, all of a sudden, expectations for C.J. Stroud are sky high. The other thing, it just all of a sudden it sort of just reminds you of, like, remember C.J. Stroud at Ohio State where he had Olave and Garrett Wilson and JSN?
Right.
And now all of a sudden he's got three studs again at wide receiver. Like, sky's the limit for C.J. Stroud.
I think so as you go through the Texans. So clearly good for C.J. Stroud. I don't think this is that bad for Joe Mixon, just given that he's going to have a more spaced floor to operate, so to speak. I think more touchdown equity just in the offense. But I do think it hurts Nico Collins a little bit just because it's someone who cuts into his target share. I think it hurts Tank Dell a fair bit as well, just because now he is wide receiver three. And I think it kind of hurts Stephon Diggs a bit because he's not a clear wide receiver one anymore. But I do think an underrated thing is that when you're in Buffalo, like, Josh Allen's not passing numbers always fall off in the second half of the season because it just gets colder in Buffalo. And you get these random games where Mac Jones throws three times in the wind because it's just insane and the total is like 30. But now Diggs goes into a dome, so I think that is a big win. You get him out of the AFC East as well. Doesn't have to play the Jets twice. Probably easier defenses that he's going up against in the Jags, the Titans, and the Colts. So I think it's difficult to pass with Diggs. He might just be happier as well. He might just play better and not have the weird second half of last season. So I don't think Diggs, I don't think he changes that much, but I think Collins and Dell go down.
I think schematically, too, something here is that with Diggs, they always liked playing him inside, outside. In Houston, if his most advantageous spot is the slot, you can put him in the slot. Nico Collins is a great outside wide receiver. Tank Dell, considering his size, is a very good outside wide receiver. So this opens up the slot opportunity for Diggs, where, in my opinion, he looks his best at this stage of his
career. Yeah, I think it's probably negligible. I think to your point, Stephon Diggs takes a step down in the sense that he's now got a lot more targets to – he's got more target competition than he had in Buffalo. But on the other hand, right, he plays in a dome now. I think they're going to try to get him more easy touches. The point of the matter is like, I'm sure the Texans did their homework, and they understand that, like, look, you don't trade for C.J. Stroud. And I guess they didn't give up all that much, but they are taking on still a pretty big contract. Right? You don't make that trade for Stephon Diggs to use him as a situational player. Like, he's going to be a big part of this offense. Is he a 1B to Nico Collins 1A? Sure, maybe. But to your point, like, I think that they will try to get him some of those cheap bubble screens, those, you know, those quick slants, those right. kind of things, try to get him in space. And so ultimately, I think that being in a dome, being in a better division, and probably having easier routes to run because there'll be defensive attention on Nico Collins and Tank Dell, and just, you know, if you're a defensive coordinator facing the Texans now, it is pick your poison. Like, somebody's going to be in single coverage.
Yep.
One of those guys is going to be in single coverage, and what are you going to do there? And to your point about Joe Mixon, totally agree. Like again, if I'm a defensive coordinator, again, I've thought about this for 30 seconds, right? I mean, defensive coordinators are going to spend all offseason thinking about that. But if you're a defensive coordinator and you're like, okay, I'm playing the Texans this week, I got a choice. I can either load the box to try to stop Joe Mixon and suddenly all my guys are on an island against Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Stephon Diggs, or I can play too high safety. I can play way back. And you know what? I'll give up 5 yards to Joe Mixon every single time because I'm going to make them at least dink and dunk their way, as opposed to just any one of those guys, any one of those three guys can go over the top so easily. Like, you've got to protect against that, especially with Stroud being as good as he is. Like, you know, he's going to look around and be like, oh, that's the guy I'm going for. And so and they will be in scoring position more often, and they'll use Mixon at the goal line. I think this is actually a nice trade for Joe Mixon's fantasy value here as well. Nico Collins, who I had as a top 10 wide receiver 24 hours ago, he has to come outside the top 10 because, again, now he's suddenly got competition in Diggs. I also wonder if this maybe – if they're a little bit concerned about Tank Dell's recovery. I wonder if this
– serious injury, small guy, speedster.
Yeah, who was great last year in a small sample size. And so, you know, they're like, hey, we've got a window here. We've got C.J. Stroud's rookie contract, and we've got a chance to really do something. We don't have to pay Nico Collins yet. We don't have to pay a lot of the defense yet. Like, we've got a small window here to really make some noise. So, hey, we can take on Diggs's contract and try to protect against the fact that, like, remember Tony Pollard?
Yeah.
Tony Pollard broke his leg the year before, and he came back in time, but he wasn't the same guy for the first half of the season. Again, Tank Dell, smaller guy who had a similar injury. Again, like a speed guy, if you're nervous about maybe he this protects against, you know, if Tank Dell isn't 100% ready to go.
Yep.
Real quickly, the trickle effect on the Bills offense. Now, this is a difficult subject because we all know the Bills are going to draft a wide receiver
early.
At least one. So it's hard to actually make predictions of what does this do for who and that, because we don't have the full puzzle yet in front of us. But I think the guys that are there, how do you look at them right now?
I think if I had to draft today, I feel like the safest guy – first off, let's start with Josh Allen. It's not ideal for Josh Allen. Like, regardless of whatever's happening in the locker room, losing somebody the talent of Stephon Diggs is not great. But he's still Josh Allen. I think the wide receiver room is not complete, to your point. I think they will add some guys. There's also some big-name free agents we'll talk about in a second. Maybe they trade for somebody, you know – do the Bills trade for Brandon Ayuk? Do the Bills trade for T. Higgins, both rumored to be on the trade block? Like, you could certainly see them not being done. I will tell you this. I would be shocked if this trade was made without Josh Allen's tacit approval. I don't think they he's the franchise. They're not – Josh Allen isn't learning about this by, you know, a tweet
Twitter.
From the NFL Network or Schefter, right? You know what I mean? Like, he's my expectation is that there's probably more to it than just football as to, you know, why this trade goes down, and they're not done yet. But Josh Allen, because of the rushing, because of the touchdowns, Josh Allen's still gonna be my number one quarterback in fantasy. But with Stephon Diggs and now Gabe Davis gone, Connor, what kind of wide receiver do you think the Bills are definitely drafting one in the first round, and I think there's a chance they take one in round two as well. But, like, now we sort of thought, like, it's definitely going to be somebody on the side. Is it, like, absolute? There's no way they're doing a slot guy because now all they've got is they've got Shakur and
right.
Curtis Samuel, blah, blah, blah. So,
yeah, it's a big outside vertical receiver. And if you go way up into this draft, which is not going to be easy to do from the 28th pick, you're looking at Roma Dunze, you're looking at Brian Thomas Jr. If you're stuck at 28, you're in the world of, you know, Adonai Mitchell from Texas and Keon Coleman from Florida State. I don't think the Bills are going to be looking at the Ladd McConkeys of the world as much as he can play inside and outside. I think they need somebody, Jay, where, you know, this is the highlight right now, but they also lost Gabe Davis. So the presence to win down the field right now, especially with size, feels like it's lacking in this offense.
Yeah, I think Khalil Shakir is the interesting one because he had an excellent close to last season. I've always enjoyed Khalil Shakir's work. He's just a very good player. Also, Connor, I think your Jets now have the best roster in the AFC East.
On paper. It's all about keeping the old men healthy. Yeah. And there's a lot of old dudes on paper with that team.
Don't the Dolphins still on paper.
They did lose some guys.
It'd be wide open. I guarantee those. I mean, set the odds
they're
for me.
They're right plus 200 to win the division. The Bills are plus 160. The Dolphins are plus 200 as well.
So almost even across the board?
Pretty even. Patriots won't win the division. But those top three, pretty close.
Just to put a bow here on the Bills, yes, your point. Like, this wide receiver room isn't done yet. Could they, whether it's like Higgins and IU, could they sign OBJ, who's a free agent? Tyler Boyd, you know, like your guy Michael Thomas is out there. Wow. Some DJ Shark, you know. Anyway, they're not done tinkering yet. But if I had to draft today, I feel like the safest guy is probably Dalton Kincaid.
For sure.
Because they're not going to trade another tight end, and he came on towards the second half of last year. So it'll be interesting to see Shakir versus Curtis Samuel. Yeah. I think Curtis Samuel was a really nice signing by them. He's a very talented player who's now going to see a big lift in target share. So I like Curtis Samuel, but they're going to be a more balanced offense, you know, between run and pass, and they may just sort of. Shakir and Samuel may just sort of balance each other out. And so one week it's one guy and the next week it's the next. I do feel like Dalton Kincaid is a guy who's going to have a very solid role at a position that doesn't have a ton of depth in terms of fantasy football. So he's the guy I feel best about on the Bills as it stands today.
Yep, agreed.
By the way, you probably saw the little sneak peek in the corner there. Out both Alabama and NC State hoops drink free, as well as the city of Buffalo, I think, after this trade.
Yeah.
Thanks, Khalil Shakir.
For sure. And the city of Houston, let's be honest. Yeah. But, like, you know, my son, it's been a great Final Four or March Madness in the Barry household because, as you guys know, my son goes to Alabama, Roll Tide. My wife actually went to UConn. I went on Bet the Edge. I made my Bet the Edge debut where I predicted UConn would win it all. And so far, that prediction that no one else believed in, no one had them, no one thought the Huskies could do it again.
They definitely weren't the favorites.
Yeah, definitely. They weren't the number one overall seed. No one believed in UConn.
Sleeper picks.
So far. I did have Alabama going far, too. Again, more homerish than anything else. But so far, it's looking good. But shout out to Alabama because they're going to the Final Four. Shout out to NC State because NC State, not only the men, but also the women in the Final Four. It's a great time to be a Wolfpack fan, and also shout out to UConn. UConn with a big upseat, UConn women, who everyone had just sort of left for dead because they had so many injuries at the beginning of the year. The UConn women upsetting USC and Juju Watkins to get to the Final Four. You know, it's weird. When people talk about Belichick and they talk about Nick Saban and they talk about Phil Jackson, they talk about the great coaches of all time, any sport, I feel like Gino Auriemma does not get nearly the due that he does among the echelon of elite coaches of all time, any sport.
Yep. Dan Quinn as well.
Yes. Riverboat Ron.
Riverboat Ron.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, but like honestly, like, he's not – Gino Auriemma, and doesn't need me to blow smoke, like, that guy's been more than, you know, feted throughout his life. But I'm just saying, like, he's not a finalist for Coach of the Year. Like, he's not. It's Lisa Bluter from Iowa, and it's I'm forgetting her name, but the woman that the head coach of USC.
We need to be able to bet on this stuff. Then I could tell you everything you wanted to
know. No, I understand, but I'm just. But my point is like, and Dawn Staley is, and like, all very deserving. But Gino Auriemma is not nominated for Coach of the Year, and despite the fact that, like, they lost five.
Yeah, it's like Andy Reid and the Chiefs.
It's the expectations factor.
The expectations factor.
Yes,
but. The last thing I'll say is that I have watched, and I'm curious have you watched a lot of the NCAA women's basketball tournament?
A lot of Caitlin Clark.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Oh, Caitlin Clark's unbelievable, but I have watched a decent, because of that, Syracuse women, they played UConn really tough. I watched all that game. I watched all the Caitlin Clark games. I watched a decent amount of UConn women as well because of my wife. And so it has been a phenomenal tournament.
Yes.
It has been so much fun to watch the entire women's tournament. And I believe, actually, I think the women, at the college level, I believe the women play the game better than the men in terms of fundamentals.
Oh, 100%. Like, the men is just driving kick. It's kind of tough to... It's the worst thing losing a bet on men's college basketball, because it's like, why are you playing like this? With the women, one, I think it's just been a better tournament overall. Caitlin Clark has been the best thing about March Madness, clearly.
She's the best story in sports over the last month.
I don't know why LSU were going under every screen, but outside of that, she's magnificent. She's going to be huge for just American sport in general.
I cannot wait. I have two predictions. First off, Lindsey Gottlieb, I've been told, is the USC coach. I apologize, I had a brain fart, but she's also a nominee for Coach of the Year from USC. But I cannot wait till I'm going to call September 15th.
Okay.
The first time Jay wears an Indiana Fever jersey on set. You know, bandwagon Jay.
I might take the under.
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be when we come back in August.
Feels like a match made in heaven, given my bandwagon tendencies and having three young daughters.
It feels you're ditching like the Liberty right just like that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's no attachment to the Liberty. Yeah, they lost. They lost to the Aces. I'm done with them. Yeah.
How quick it goes.
I'm a big Fever guy.
You're done.
Let's go.
You know what? And by the way, when you go buy your Homer bandwagon, Caitlin Clark Fever jersey, buy two. Let's throw one up on here.
Yeah, let's
absolutely.
Do it. Go, Caitlin.
Absolutely. She's easy to root for.
All right, Matthew, let's keep your rankings going this week. We are on 21 through 30. We will take this thing all the way to 50 today. So you're way too early, 2024 rankings, as you see. 21, Davante Adams. 22, Josh Jacobs. 23, Travis Etienne. 24, Mike Evans. 25, Jalen Hurts. 26, Chris Olave. 27, Michael Pittman Jr. 28, Rashee Rice. 29, DJ Moore. And, of course, number 30 right there, Deebo Samuel. Jay, when you see this board, what sticks out to you here?
So Josh Jacobs, to me, is maybe the most interesting player in fantasy this year, where, like, 2 years ago, he wins the rushing title. He finishes as RB3 while dealing with, like, a litany of little injuries. Like, he had the hamstring. When he had that walk-off touchdown against Seattle, which no one watched because the broadcast cut away from it because of the rights issue, he did that on a bad hamstring. Like, he was nicked up all season, started an amazing year. And now he goes to an even better situation. Like, the Packers have a better offensive line. There's no competition for him. A.J. Dillon is the competition, which means there is no competition. So I think Josh Jacobs, just as a workhorse, with Matt LaFleur talking about using him more in the passing game, like, there are absolutely worlds where he could finish as RB1. And it's weird because I just don't feel like he has that much buzz around his name for whatever reason, which I don't get, because he was like a high draft pick who won the rushing title. But I think he is being a little bit underrated.
I would agree with you. I'm at running back 8, and I think you'll see his ADP rise as we continue to talk about this. He's, to your point, very talented player on a good offense that'll be in scoring position more often with a better offensive line. And the key here is, will they use him in the passing game, which is something we have seen the Packers do with their running backs, whether it's Aaron Jones, even A.J. Dillon caught some balls as well. So the fact of the matter is, Jacobs, who's actually a pretty good pass catcher, when they do use him in that way, I think he could have a monster year. Number one running back in fantasy is not outside the realm of possibilities. It's all dependent on the passing game usage, obviously, and, you know, and McCaffrey staying healthy. But the fact of the matter is that I'm at running back 8. I have him at the, you know, I'm at running overall at 23. But my suspicion is that will continue to rise as we get closer to September. He was on the love list after free agency, for sure.
Last thing quickly on Jacobs, because people are going to look at his stats last year. I'm just kind of, it's maybe this is subjective and too aggressive, but I'm just kind of throwing that out because of how weird his offseason was with the franchise thing. We spoke to him at the Super Bowl in Phoenix. Like, that wasn't a good situation with him in Vegas. So I'm just kind of giving him a bit of a pass because he's still young enough and he was so good in 22.
And by the way, the team was a disaster. The coach gets fired, different, you know, and Antonio Pierce comes in, and, like, the offensive line is bad, and, like, the quarterback situation is a disaster. I mean, like, all of it's just, not great.
Matthew, let me ask you about number 26, Chris Olave, because I don't worry about the player at all. He's an awesome player. Everything that's gone on with the Saints this offseason, now we're hearing Ryan Ramczyk, who's been a staple at right tackle, might be out for the year. Trevor Penning, their first-round pick, has been a disaster at left tackle, where he's been benched. Derek Carr, notoriously a guy that crumbles when the offensive line is not capable. Any fear of not Olave the player, but Olave the situation he's in?
You know what? Somewhat. But the fact of the matter is that I think that in that scenario, is what you talk about, like, it all goes to hell, you know, it all goes to crap, you know, and they're losing, they're going to be throwing. And again, I'm just banking on, you know, massive target share for a really talented player that will have mid-tier quarterback play. Like, whatever Derek Carr is, even Derek Carr behind a bad offensive line is still going to be better than, you know, 12 or 13 quarterbacks right. in the NFL. Like, he's never going to be worse than, like, quarterback 20 in the NFL. Like, he's somewhere in that QB 15 to QB 20 range from a pure NFL standpoint. And so if they're, you know, and he's always going to take deep shots, Derek Carr will, and he's always going to take Chris Olave. So this is a bank on talent and volume and the rest of it, and also environment, right? Like, the NFC South doesn't scare you that much as a division. It's a better defensive division. You know, obviously, the Bucs are good defensively. The Panthers are better defensively than they get credit for as well. And the Falcons are going to improve. But, I don't know. He's, you know, he's in a dome, you know, for, you know, he's in a dome for at least 11 games or whatever it is. I forget the exact number off the top of my head, but at least 10 games, I guess I should say, because he's definitely playing the Falcons and he's got, you know, the 8 home games. Or the 9 home games, right?
He's got nine home games this year. Yep. I think the other thing, too, is, like, Derek Carr was, like, a cinematic, I don't know, who's, like, a cinematic character who just gets beaten up a lot, like Jack Bauer, like, a 24 season, where, like, he was constantly hurt. He's getting concussed, his shoulder.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It didn't feel like he was right all season. So you'd have to project at least a little bit better health for Derek Carr this year.
The last one on this list that's really intriguing, Matthew, is DJ Moore. I mean, sure. We expect a passing upgrade under center in Caleb Williams, and the supporting cast around him has gotten really good in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, I think the offense is just going to be a lot better. I think Caleb Williams is – they're giving Caleb Williams every possible tool to succeed. And so, yes, there is Keenan Allen coming in, which will be more, you know, more target competition than he had last year. But, you know, Keenan Allen is on the wrong side of 30. He is somebody that has dealt with injuries throughout his career. DJ Moore last year, almost a 29% target share, 96 receptions, over 1,300 yards. He had the 8 touchdowns, of course, career highs in all of those target share, receptions, receiving yards, receiving touchdowns. He was the 9th best wide receiver in fantasy last year on a points per game basis. And so Keenan Allen, you know, I think, again, it's one of those, like, yes, there's more target competition. There's also less attention on DJ Moore because they have to account for Keenan Allen. I think the team will be a lot better. The offense will be a lot better. So DJ Moore, who, again, was wide receiver 9 last year, you downgrade him a little bit because of the target competition. He's wide receiver 18 for me this year, so you bring him down a little bit as well. Remember, Keenan Allen had a 32% target share last year. You don't make the deal for Keenan Allen to not feed him as well. But DJ Moore is just so good and can run every route that I feel like, ultimately, you know, he's still going to be a top 20 wide receiver.
Yep. Connor, who's... in terms of Caleb Williams' skill set, do you think that matches better with the skill set of DJ Moore or Keenan Allen? I know, people, like, we're going to draft DJ Moore ahead of Keenan Allen because he's better and more explosive, but who do you think that he matches up better with?
Yeah. I would actually lean with DJ Moore because I think Caleb doesn't get enough credit for how accurate of a, you know, he's a full field reader and can throw with accuracies. All the highlight reel plays are him running around for 20 seconds and finding somebody down the field, which Moore could do as well. You like Keenan Allen's size in those scenarios, but I think the timing between him and DJ Moore was something. Fields and Moore had a good connection, but it wasn't really based off of timing. It was screen, deep ball, I'm extending a play. I think Caleb could be a drop-back passer and find Moore in the intermediate area of the field.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot, you know, how quickly can Caleb Williams develop and what kind of offense do they want to run in Chicago here? Do they want to be more run-heavy or do they, you know, are they going to, you know, let him C.J. Stroud it?
I think they will.
I think so, too. Yeah. I think, you know, he's as pro-ready as a quarterback is coming into the league. And you just sort of think about this situation that I think this is, we've seen this before. We have seen multiple times where, whether it's Ayuk and Deebo Samuel, Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, you know, Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson back in the day in Minnesota. We have seen where teams can support 2 fantasy relevant wide receivers. And I think that both Keenan Allen and DJ Moore will be top 20-ish wide receivers this year.
Let's jump into 31 through 40, and a reminder to read the full rankings. They're all on NBCSports.com if you want to keep up with them there as we
jump. Or RotoWorld.com.
Or RotoWorld.com.
Right. There's a little Matthew Berry tab. It's very easy for you if you want to find
them out.
You
have your own tab.
I have my own tab.
One of the great tabs.
One of the best tabs.
Top 10 tab.
Top 10 tab. Some people are saying it's the best tab in the universe. Not me, of course, but some people are saying it's the greatest tab of all tabs.
Now I lost to Oppenheimer.
Ever. Right, exactly. It's the Oppenheimer of tabs. It's not the Barbie of tabs.
No,
yes,
Bobby lost.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
31.
Exactly. It's the Kevin Stefanski of tabs,
the coach
if you will. I don't know how many people know this. Kevin Stefanski actually won Coach of the Year.
I actually just found that out.
Yeah, 1,000%. A lot of people did.
Exclusive interview.
A lot of people did. But I'm just telling you, Kevin Stefanski won Coach of the Year. Yeah. Exactly.
For second time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. 31. D'Amico Ryan's now, he's buying the eight ball on it because they're like, oh, they gave you Stephon Diggs, dude. Yeah. Like, you know.
Now
we have expectations.
Yes.
I still think he'll win if they get like the one seed. Connor and I were talking about this on the chain that you're not a part of.
Yes.
D'Amico Ryans gets the one seed after losing on a tiebreak this year. He's winning coach of the year.
They're going to give it to him. Yeah. I wonder what those odds went to because it was like plus 1,600 at that time.
I don't know.
Anything could happen. Like Dave Canales could win 10 games.
If the Lions wind up with a one seed, Dan Campbell gets it.
I like that too. I like that.
Call. I mean, like.
Yeah.
Yep.
America and the media love Dan Campbell.
Yes. He's also just like, he has so many Coach of the Year type of moments because he's just going for it on fourth down. Such a loud coaching moment. Yeah. You just point, oh, that's coaching, the fact that he went for it. And I think he...
Controlled chaos,
yes,
right?
Yes. You know? I think he would have won it this year if the Taylor Decker thing didn't get called back against Dallas, because that would have been such an epic
signature
win.
Moment.
Yeah. Two seed moment. Detroit Lions, best Lions season in 30 years. So, yeah, these are the things that turns out. And then you would have been right with the Kevin Stefanski nearly winning Coach of the Year because Dan Campbell would have won it.
That's Campbell currently 15-1, according to our friends at DraftKings.
There you go. I like that.
I like it.
31 through 40, and 31 kicks off here with Derrick Henry, a newly signed Baltimore Raven, DK Metcalf at 32. Tank Dell, obviously, there's going to be change here, Matthew. He's at 33.
We did these graphics just before, you know, and then, of course, Stephon Diggs gets traded to the Texans just before we come on air. So
ignore that one for now. 34, Jalen Waddle. 35, Lamar Jackson. 36, Sam Laporta, coming off an amazing rookie season for a tight end.
Yep, first tight end off the board there at 36 overall.
37, Isaiah Pacheco. 38, Joe Mixon, who the guys were pretty high on as we kicked off this show for the touchdown equity and in a great offense. And then 39, Devontae Smith, closed out by 40, Rashad White here. Jay, I know you wanted to jump right into Derrick Henry at the top as he's with his new team in Baltimore.
Yeah, another fascinating player where, so DraftKings have up these player season total over-unders, and they have Derrick Henry set at 999.5 rushing yards. The under is minus 130. And 10.5 rushing touchdowns with the under backed. And so they're basically projecting him for like, I don't know, 975 rushing yards and 10 touchdowns. And look, these numbers, they always look low because mentally you just don't kind of process the injury risk that is always baked in, particularly for a running back. But I don't know, man. I think Derrick Henry could easily get to 1,200 rushing yards and 13, 14 touchdowns. I think that he was a victim of just the situation in Tennessee and their offensive line. Just a much, much better situation in Baltimore, obviously. So, look, he's not going to be...
The Ravens as a team had 20 running back rushing touchdowns. Yeah. Like, take
Lamar out of
it. They
love to run it at the goal line with their running backs.
So, like, Gus Edwards and company had 20 rushing touchdowns as running backs for the Ravens. So that's the upside we're talking about with Derrick Henry. Like, he's going to get all the running back touchdowns, you would assume, you know. Cut to week one when they pull him at the 2-yard line, and
the
here
Kate
comes
Mitchell?
Justice Hill. Here comes Justice Hill to like
Kenyon Drake off the break.
Yeah, exactly.
Melvin You're Gordon,
like, a 6th-round running back, just compiling them.
Yeah, no, I think Derrick Henry's going to have a big year, and again, he's not going to be the sexiest name because people have been drafting him for 7 years or whatever, but he is going to produce, and he's going to be just the touchdown monster.
Matthew, you lit up when I said Sam Laporta. He comes in your top 40, obviously, first tight end off the board, as you said, as well.
Yeah, last year, tight end 3 on a points-per-game basis as a rookie, right? And, you know, limped through the injury towards, you know, in the playoffs there. But look, 86 receptions, most ever by a rookie tight end in a single season. He had a 21% target share here. And Josh Reynolds is now in Denver, and you're like, Josh Reynolds, whatever. But, like, honestly, they haven't replaced, like, maybe Jameson Williams gets more run, maybe Khalif Raymond. But listen, this passing offense is going to be Amon-Ra St. Brown and Sam Laporta. You know, and Jared Goff has gotten good, right? They still play a lot of games in the dome as well. His 10 receiving touchdowns led all tight ends last year, and I don't see any reason why he won't continue to be a big factor in the red zone. The other thing here is that you look at some of the other guys on the list. There you see Hockenson. He's coming off the major injury, right? Evan Ingram. Travis Kelce, you know, we know they're going to play limited snaps. Like, who else could be the number one tight end in fantasy? And it feels like Laporta is that guy. He's a little bit lower than the normal number one tight end. We've seen years where Travis Kelce is a first-round pick. Because I don't think the difference is while I do have Laporta as my number one tight end, I don't think the difference between him and Mark Andrews, him and Travis Kelce, is as massive as in previous years where it was like Kelce, big drop, and then you're 2-3. So that was one reason why he's you know, here basically in the fourth round. The other reason is that he's not the number one passing option on his own team, right? That's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now, he's still going to get a ton of looks. He's still – look, again, that was the case last year. He was the third best tight end in fantasy. But unlike Kelce or Andrews at the sort of peak of their powers, those guys were the number one passing options on their team. Laporta isn't. So I have him lower in the overall ranks because the difference between him and some of the other elite guys is not as great as we've seen in previous years.
I like how you said that Jared Goff has gotten good, as though he got like a makeover, like Steve Carell in Crazy Stupid Love got like a makeover from Brian Gosling. Now he's good.
Yeah,
now
he goes out,
he dresses well, stop drinking vodka cranberries.
Yeah, something like that. Look, Connor, though, am I wrong, though? Like, there has been being in a better situation, being having a great offensive line, but like when he was in L.A., there was an inconsistency to his play that I think has been still every once in a while he'll make a boneheaded play, but Jared Goff is a much better quarterback these days in Detroit than he ever was in L.A. That's my argument. You tell me if
behind a great offensive line, which is the most important thing
course.
For Jared Goff. That's the number one thing is if Jared Goff's not pressured, he will pick you apart.
Yeah. Right.
And that's an offense written up by Ben Johnson that is designed on getting the ball out in time.
Ben Johnson.
Yes. The fact that he's back.
The one
is
that got
huge.
Away.
Yeah. The fact that he's back is so huge. I think because Goff is. To your point, the type of guy, like the NFC title game was the perfect embodiment of Jared Goff, where when he had time, he was excellent in that game. And then the one play, the fourth down play, where he had to create out of contact. Well, yeah, he basically had to create by himself, and they didn't diagnose the fact that Dre Greenlaw was actually dropping into zone coverage, and then they just can't do anything outside of structure. But he's fantastic when in structure and protected.
Matthew, one more on this group before we move to 41 to 50. And I know this is hard to balance with different players, but does Laporta having such a great rookie season, which is so uncommon for tight ends, give you some hope for when Brock Bowers is eventually drafted? I know it will matter where he goes, but still, we're always careful with the rookie tight end because historically they just don't produce.
Yeah, no, certainly it does. I mean, again, where's he getting drafted? What's his competition for targets? Who's his quarterback? All those things. But I think that based on the success of the last 2 years, right? So it's not just Laporta, but think about Dalton Kincaid, what he did, right? Think about even Trey McBride, his rookie year, right? You know, towards the end of that, like we've seen some of these rookie tight ends have a bigger impact than they have previously. So I think just at the college level, I was convinced that had he stayed healthy, Luke Musgrave would have been a thing last year
He had moments.
Yeah, and so. So, yes, I have more confidence in Brock Bowers producing this year for fantasy than I might have 2-3 years ago because of the you know, we've seen multiple rookie tight ends have immediate impact in fantasy.
Let's move to the final gap here for today, 41 to 50, as we jump into this group here. And there's a lot of players that I'm excited to break down. I know James Cook is going to be number 41. You want to get into him for a while there, Matthew. We will. 42, Devon Achane. 43, Patrick Mahomes. 44, Amari Cooper. 45, Keenan Allen. 46, T. Higgins. We'll see if he's still a Cincinnati Bengal. It is looking that way. 47, Cooper Kupp. 48, Zay Flowers after his rookie season. 49, Travis Kelce. The long wait for Kelce stacked with Mark Andrews at 50. But, Matthew, let's start with James Cook at 41. Stephon Diggs out of Buffalo. We saw James Cook really figure it out down the stretch under Joe Brady.
Once Joe Brady took over, he was the 11th best running back on a points-per-game basis from week 11 on. He averaged almost 20 touches a game. He had a 12% target share over that stretch as well. Now, look, there's still a concern around the goal line. It's still going to be Josh Allen as well. Inside the 10-yard line from week 11 on, he still only saw 32% of the team rushes. Like, you know, whether it's Latavius Murray, the ghost of Latavius Murray, or somebody else, you know. Ty Johnson, right, exactly. You know, and Josh Allen's always a threat there. So, you know, there's still some concern on touchdown equity as well with James Cook. So that's why I'm a little bit lower. But running back 14 feels like this is the right range for him in terms of the overall. You know, just a very solid RB2 that will have RB1 spike weeks.
Right after that was Devon Achane. Now, this is right on the heels of Mostert kind of having a reworked deal with the Dolphins. But I think most importantly, what we're figuring out with the Dolphins is balancing this backfield where Mostert was great last year.
Yeah, but and so was Achane.
Right.
And so, I mean, I actually think Raheem Mostert at cost is going to be the better value. As much as we love Devon Achane, and he's going to be awesome and he's amazing when he's healthy. But, like, they're going to use both guys. They want both guys healthy. That offense is going to play at such a fast pace and be in scoring position so often that both guys are going to return fantasy value. And so I kind of like Mostert at cost, who's going to go much later in drafts than the sexy Devon Achane, right? Because everyone's going to want, oh, Devon Achane, they can remember the 200-yard games and, you know, the big plays. But the fact of the matter is that Raheem Mostert was one of the best running backs in fantasy football. Raheem Mostert, a member of Live at Noon on the Cock. Like, I have to send him his championship ring. Raheem Mostert, Raheem Must Start, friend of the podcast, Raheem friend the of the show, Raheem the Dream. I'm just saying.
Man, like, of many names.
Man of many names. Yeah. Just say he's part of the championship culture that we've built at Live at Noon on the Cock.
Yeah. I will say with Achane, he had, and I know that the end of his season and he was injured and he just had that many moments. At the start of the season, he had these moments where it's like Victor Wembanyama-esque, where you're watching it, it's like, what is this? It's like, what is this sport? Like, he just the way that he would glide and accelerate, it's like he's just playing at a different speed and a different kind of space-time continuum to all the other players. And so he just didn't get back to that. And I think that was because probably the injury, and he's just kind of, you know, he's a rookie and he's easing into it. Like, there were stretches last year where it's like, is he just the best running back in football and this is just what's going to happen from now on? And so I still think there is some of that ceiling still there, but most of it is clearly going to get his touches.
Yeah, but anyway, both guys I think will be, and because of that, because he ended the season poorly, I do think Achane potentially is a value as well. There's some, you know, the injury risk and the Mostert usage is baked into where I have Achane ranked, but like, again, top five running back, and if he stays healthy, you know, that's in the range of outcomes for him. A lot of people say, Matthew, do you watch the NBA? And I say, yes, I do. I love the NBA. And they're like, why? And I say, well, otherwise I won't get any of Jay's references on the effing show.
It is, forbid, it is a homework assignment. Hey,
God forbid he just talks football.
Right.
Kobe White. We've had some Stromal Swift references in the past. Yeah, we go deep into the bag.
Yeah.
43J, Patrick Mahomes. A long wait to get to Patrick Mahomes, but his wide receiver situation becomes more curious by the day, it feels like.
Yeah, he's my sleeper pick next year, Patrick Mahomes.
Let me write this one down.
Good.
How do you spell the last name?
That's funny. I still feel like the Chiefs had this awful season last year. They won the Super Bowl.
They did.
I think, so Mahomes finished as QB8 last year with everything going wrong. Like, that is the worst season that Mahomes can have statistically. He was still QB8 the year before without Tyreek Hill. He was QB1 in fantasy. So I think that with Marquise Brown, and we'll see what happens with Rashee Rice, because I don't know how to project that. I don't think that Rashee Rice is going to be like out for the season or anything with what's available at this moment. I know it's not good, but we need to see what happens there. But assuming that Rashee Rice is out there with Kelce, with Marquise Brown, finally just give them back that deep threat that they haven't really had since Tyreek left, and I'm not counting Marquez Valdes-Scantling's fulfilling that role. I think that Mahomes has certainly a lot of scope. Now, Josh Allen clearly has to be the guy because of the rushing upside and the touchdowns, and you probably rather Hurts over Mahomes as well, but you know, I don't think anyone's going to be shocked if Mahomes is the number one quarterback in fantasy again.
Yeah, and by the way, they're in the mix for drafting, you know, again, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but it's a very deep wide receiver class.
They'll take
this
one.
This year, don't you think?
Like,
yes. The Chiefs are one of the teams.
Yep.
The Chiefs are one of the teams that will likely draft a wide receiver that maybe that wide receiver won't be relevant for fantasy because there are so many mouths to feed in the passing offense, but it's just another weapon for Mahomes. They still have hopes for Sky Moore and Kadarius Toney. One of those guys can emerge. I don't understand why
them Justin, and only them have that hope.
I know, but I still understand like why. I don't know if it's just maybe the guy just can't, you know, maybe he's dumb as a box of rocks or he can't like run a route tree or whatever. But like, I don't understand why Justin Watson doesn't get more run.
I know.
No,
Some bad drops, but not nearly as many as Marquez Valdes-Scantling, and that guy gets run.
Justin Watson cost me a lot of money in that Eagles game.
I know.
He just dropped everything in the game.
But I feel like twice a game, Justin Watson makes some big play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and he also like gets all these, you know, crazy like pass interference yards. I don't know.
I think he's better than Sky Moore.
Yeah, I don't understand why Justin Watson can't get more run. There's got to be a reason, and
you know why Mahomes is the greatest? You know the two wide receivers who have caught the game-winning touchdowns in the last two Super Bowls?
Nicole Hardman.
And Sky Moore.
Yep.
Nothing else outside of Winston's hands. Yeah.
Finally, with this group, Cooper Kupp, typically a top 20 pick, Matthew.
Yes, my little Cooper Kupp.
The rise of Puka Nacua, I won't say leads to the downfall of Cooper Kupp, of number 47 on the rankings.
Yeah, listen, the fact of the matter is that I think you just sort of feel like you prefer Puka Nacua to Cooper Kupp at this stage of their careers. Cooper Kupp on the wrong side of 30, dealt with injuries again last season as well. Nacua was clearly the preferred option down the stretch as well. And part of the problem for Cooper Kupp's fantasy value is that Cooper Kupp is such a good teacher that he's helping Puka Nacua become so great. We actually spoke with Puka Nacua at the Super Bowl. Listen to this, where he talked about Cooper Kupp and the impact he's had on his career.
He's been like the brother I didn't know I had. He's been so fun. We get to joke around. I love playing pig with him. I get him to move around. I know he's been in the league for a little while, so I try to make sure I don't overexhaust all the energy he's got. But I love just we play a little word hunt game. So I feel like I try to sometimes I feel like I'm the little annoying little brother to him. But then also when we get to sit and talk routes and we're talking about leverage and how to double up somebody and how to move and understand where the defense goes, It's music to my ears because he has a plethora of knowledge and he's willing to give it all. So it makes learning the game of wide receiver super fun for him.
Yeah.
Jay with his typical, yup. Just kind of agrees with him.
Thanks, Puka.
Thanks, Puka. Fact of the matter is that unfortunately Cooper Kupp, the mentor, has been so good along with Puka Nacua's talent that it has hurt Cooper Kupp's fantasy production, as you see it there on your screen. Now, some of this, of course, is influenced by the fact that Kupp missed a number of games at the start of the year and then, you know, was banged up at different times during last season. But Nacua last year finished, you know, as a top six fantasy wide receiver, Kupp 23. There's injury concerns with Kupp. I think a second year of Nacua in the system, he'll be the preferred target of Matthew Stafford. Cooper Kupp's still going to be very, very good. 27% target share in all the healthy games he had last season. But also last year, under 62 yards a game, under 5 receptions a game. That's the fewest since his rookie season. They added DeMarcus Robinson as well, who is another threat for Matthew Stafford. And again, you obviously prefer Kupp much more than DeMarcus Robinson, but it's another viable pass catcher that can take 4 or 5 targets a game away. So, you know, Kupp comes in at wide receiver 27 for me. Still think a very viable wide receiver, but more of a, there's risk there with Kupp that there wasn't before.
I think we're going to look back 10, 15 years from now at Cooper Kupp's career and just look through it, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's this really solid slot guy, and then he had the greatest wide receiver season of all time and won Super Bowl MVP, and then went back to being a really solid slot guy. It's very strange, but I think that I agree with you. I think it hurts as well that him and Nacua are kind of like, they're similar player types. Like, it's not like one is some vertical deep threat. They kind of do a lot of the same stuff. And then also with Kupp, even though I think the idea was always that he would age really gracefully because he's not super dependent on his athleticism, I think that's a misnomer across all sports, where guys who aren't super explosive, and look, he's a great athlete all the same, but when you lose a little bit off of that, I think it can hurt you even more. So I'm sure he's still going to be excellent. He still did have 4 games last year of 110-plus receiving yards. He's still a great wide receiver, but clearly you'd rather have Nacua.
If you told me he was going to play every game, that he wasn't going to be injured, if he guaranteed me that, then he's a wide receiver too. But because there's a chance that you're going to miss a couple of games there, or he's going to come into the week. The Rams will be playing a Sunday night game, and he's got a hammy, and we just don't know if he's going to go until game time, and you're going to be like, I can't risk it with Kupp, so I'm going to just start somebody in 1 o'clock games because he's a true game time decision. Like, because of that, he's a wide receiver 3 who will have wide receiver 1 spike weeks throughout the season. So, like, wide receiver 3 with upside, you know.
That's the thing.
Yeah, you don't like using that phrase, but it is. I mean, like, he's going to be that guy.
Is that too big of an adjustment? Because going into 2 seasons ago, we were talking about Cooper Kupp as the number 1 pick in fantasy. And now, like, he's not that old. Like, I still think that there is...
But he's had major injuries over the last 2 years.
He
and they've added somebody that is a massive threat to a team that still wants to run the ball.
I think I'm going to end up having a lot of shares of Cooper Kupp this
Same.
Season.
Yeah. But again, like... Again, you know,
have a contingency plan.
Yeah.
Have a contingency plan,
like,
because
he will win you weeks, and you will be without him for weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Similar to, I mean, you were in on Michael Thomas last year as well.
Right? He won you 2 weeks.
You were like
another offensive player.
Another guy that was really, really had a great wide receiver season. Sure. Older, dealt with some injuries.
I look for the best in people. I remember the good times. Yep. What are you going to blame me for?
Not like a younger player is taking over that passing offense.
Yeah.
All
right.
Big year for Michael Thomas coming up.
With that, let's jump into Last Call and let's take a look at the odds for the number 2 overall pick, courtesy of our friends at DraftKings. Jaden Daniels. Matthew, this is a big one for you, this number 2 overall pick. Jaden Daniels, the favorite at minus 130. Drake May at plus 110. I agree with that. And then J.J. McCarthy, a distant third at plus 300. And then this falls off a clip with Caleb Williams, who will be the number 1 overall pick, plus 4,000. Marvin Harrison Jr., all the way.
Haven't the Bears officially said that? I thought
it's just one of those well-known.
Well, no, but I thought Ryan Poles was on an interview actually think I literally thought he was with McAfee guys, right? Wasn't he where he said something like, "Yeah, I'm taking Caleb Williams." Like, didn't
I don't know, but it's implied.
Like, the NFL gets really angry about that, so you can't outright say it. But yes,
it's,
so anyway, that's anyway. I don't know. Like I don't know what the Commanders are going to do.
What are you hearing?
And the what I'm nothing. Like,
aren't you? Do you have a minority stake in the team?
No,
that was you and Durant.
I got turned down. It's very upsetting. I'm trying to still weasel my way in, but no, you know. So, like, you hear some Jaden Daniels, you hear some Drake May, you hear J.J. McCarthy.
You do.
Could be in play as well. I don't think the Commanders even know at this point what they want to do. There's a couple of guys that are really plugged in. J.P. Finley, who covers the team for NBC Sports in Washington, he's fantastic. He's as plugged in as any reporter covering a team that I know. And J.P.'s my guy. And so I'll even text J.P. like, "Hey, I know you can't report this publicly, but give me some inside dirt." And he will often say, like, "I haven't been able to double source this yet, so I haven't been able to go with it. But here's what I'm hearing on this situation or that situation." He doesn't know.
Nobody down there knows. Nobody in the draft world knows.
No, like
I think all we know is they will stay there and take a quarterback. At least that's
what
they will not move out of that.
They will not go to the season with Marcus Mariota.
Yeah.
Please, God.
No, I wouldn't have thought
so. The $6 million man.
Yeah.
I do think the JJ McCarthy's up, and I think he was like 40-1 at one point to go two, and now he's plus 300. That's a little suspicious.
Happened with Levis last year.
Yeah, exactly. I would guess, and this is uninformed, but I would guess that is mostly coming from JJ's agent to draw up interest in JJ. I
don't know if Drake made it.
That part I disagree with. Just from the sense, I think most people thought it was 41 because just based on the numbers, like they watched Michigan, of course, but like you know. His numbers don't wow you from his college career because of the way they ran that offense.
Yeah.
But I think after his pro day, after talking to him, like I feel like, and people like really digging in on the tape, they're like, "Oh, this kid is a lot better quarterback than I initially thought." Like I thought he was just more of kind of a game manager. Like he's fine, but Michigan won with defense and running the ball and everything like that, and did the typical Harbaugh stuff that they do. And they're like, "Oh no, this guy could actually really play quarterback. He was just hampered by the offense that he was in," right? It feels like that's the narrative, at least.
And he has the best PR man in the world in Jim Harbaugh. But McCarthy is a player with a lot of great pro tools that needs a lot of seasoning. I think he's going to go in the top five. Mm. He's a top of second round player this day to me.
Okay.
So there's a lot to unpack there. But I do think he will go in the top five picks of
this
draft.
By the way, you can also check out all of Connor Rogers' draft rankings in terms of prospects and everything else.
Not in the Matthew Berry tab.
No, not in
the
Matthew Berry tab.
Close. Like,
the Connor Rogers, the Bobby tab.
Yeah. No, there's not even a Connor Rogers tab. But it's just NBCSports.com or RotoWorld.com. You can find. You have to search for it. You scroll down. It's towards the bottom. It's there
take
somewhere.
A little while. DraftKings Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of the NBA. And this season, new customers can get $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download the app and use the promo code Barry when you sign up.
DraftKings Sportsbook,
the crowd is yours. All right, before we get out of here, some final thoughts. We have a pretty funny tweet that's very on brand for you here, Matthew.
Okay, I'm down.
Some people say that men don't have commitment, but if you look at Washington Commanders fans and what they've been through, I think some things say otherwise.
All right, let's see what we got here. This is a tweet.
We've been played. It happens.
We
a little late after April.
We have no commitment to showing the tweet.
No commitment to showing the tweet.
So we've committed to the bit.
I think we're just gonna end the show.
Here's the tweet.
What is this?
Oh, wow.
That is the
men don't know what commitment is. That's from Sonny B. And then Paul goes, "Oh word," and shows all the record of Washington
since when?
Since
1994.
I forgot you won the division in 2012 with RG3.
That was a sneaky one. What a great year it was.
And then you went 3-13 and he was out of the league.
That's the, for example, that's the,
listen,
Snyder era for you. Dan Snyder, worst professional sports owner in American and, world history.
Well, if you want to come be a Giants fan with me. The bandwagon is
I might jump on the jump on the Indiana Fever WNBA bandwagon with
you. We'll get you a shot.
For anyone that's not super in the weeds on this, obviously, the Indiana Fever, the WNBA team, have the number one overall pick the expectation is that Caitlin Clark will be the number one overall pick when she does.
Caleb Williams type situation.
Yeah, it seems like a good idea to take her.
Exactly.
Just a thought.
So there you go. So, yeah, pretty sure Fever's tickets have already sold out. But look at you joining the bandwagon. Hey, that music means it's closing time. You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here. We're off next week. Go enjoy spring break with your kids, as I intend to do. After that, we will be back for Jay Croucher and Connor Rogers. I'm Matthew Berry. Good luck, UConn, Alabama, and NC State.
Sorry, Purdue.
Sorry, Purdue. Peace out.